Welcome to Filmstrip. These podcasts are spoiler-filled as we discuss the plots, characters, and themes of the films in review. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504, C2, Title 17.
Welcome to Filmstrip. I'm Jay.
I'm Ron.
We're excited to welcome to the show Casey from the Message Board Geniuses podcast. Casey, please introduce yourself, good sir. Tell folks about you and the fine work that your crew's doing over at the MBG podcast.
I can't thank you enough for having me, Jay and Ron. Yeah, I'm the long-winded one from the MBG podcast, which Message Board Geniuses, for those of you that have never heard of it, which there are a bunch out there, but we basically take the worst of the worst on the world that is message boards and make fun of them for hours on end. So we have a really, really good time. We have MBG. He's the brains behind the operation, who just has a wonderfully funny dryness about him, who's a UVA alum and a wit like none other. He plays a straight man for the most part, but good Lord, he's funny. And Joy, our LSU alum, our baby of the group, and likely the most knowledgeable college football head we have. But I love the idea of coming on with you guys, and my cohorts didn't know the movie. And my
jaw
really dropped from that. But who hasn't seen Varsity Blues?
Anyway. I know, right? Yeah. So yeah, that's what we're going to talk about. Real quick, though, our co-host Lindsay can't be here tonight because she is starring in a musical right now called Be More Chill in the Bridge Players Theater in New Jersey. She's playing the role of Chloe Valentine. So if you're wondering where Lindsay is, she will be back soon. She's off being a star while Ron and I are still, you know, kicking it on this podcast
like we usually do.
Ah, well, we'll have to have you back on but tonight it's a great night because we're talking about Varsity Blues, starring James Vanderbeek, Ron Lester, Allie Larder, Amy Smart, Paul Walker, Scott Kahn, Eliel Swinton, and John Voight, written by W. Peter Iliff and directed by Brian Robbins, who I only realized today we've covered on Filmstrip. If you go all the way back to episode 36 in the podcast archives, Brian and I talked about him in Ready to Rumble. This movie came out in January of 1999, which is really why we're doing this now. It's sort of an anniversary. $16 million budget, grossed $54 million at the box office, became a cult classic, and you don't get more infamous than being a code name for a FBI sting where Aunt Becky goes to jail. So that's you know, it's time to talk Varsity Blues. I think we all know the memes. They run all over everywhere, but I want to get everybody's background on this one. Casey, you said it. Your co-host had not seen this movie, which I'm still blown away by, but what's your background with Varsity Blues?
Man, I love this movie so much. That's not even shtick, but a little more background on me in this movie is that, I'm kind of soft and lovable, and my son is terrified of me at times, so it's a nice dichotomy. Also, just FYI, I use big words, and I have no idea what they mean, so just hang with me, even though my degree says English from Clemson. I'm digressing already. I'm sorry. I loved Dawson's Creek, which was prime Katie Holmes. Mm-hmm. Swoon. I was a religious viewer of that show and even owned the entire catalog on DVD, although sadly, I don't have a DVD player anymore. So having Dawson play, or AKA Jonathan Vanderbeek, playing Jonathan Moxon, the protagonist, was one plus for me seeing this movie. And then throwing in my other passion, any type of athletics and sports movies, and that's recipe for me camping out for tickets. I remember being so pumped for this movie about 22 years old. I was still at Clemson, I believe, because most people go to school for 5 years. And I just couldn't wait to see it, and it did not disappoint, and I mean that truly. Yep.
Yeah,
I was also an English major who went to school for 5 years, so you're in good company. But unlike Clemson, no one's heard of the place I went.
I have, because my alma mater plays y'all now, Ron.
So. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you play us, and you get stomped by our option football team.
Yeah, because we used to be an option football team at UNA, and then we gave it up for the god-awful forward pass. But now I digress. So, we were running the triple and running it down people's throats, and I will go to my grave saying that's the way to go.
When I went to Clemson, though, I'm from New Jersey, so people from New Jersey had no idea what state it was in. So I just kept saying, so back then, no one had any idea. So I'm one of the crew, too.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. So I saw this in college too, Casey. I was a senior when this came out in my last semester of college. No idea what I wanted to do at all. And, you know, all these years later, I still don't. But I went and saw this with some buddies because we had all heard of and had read about this book that H.G. Bissinger had done called Friday Night Lights. And we thought, oh, this is going to be like the MTV version of that. And for years, I was convinced that was the story of this, only to find out the script for this had been running around for about 15 years before they finally got around to making it. So it's just coincidence that it's all around the same time of stuff. But I was a Dawson's fan, too, because I was a big Buffy fan and all that. And Dawson's Creek, I always felt like Kevin Williamson wrote dialogue that no teenager on earth could ever speak. Speaking of English, you know, the words that nobody uses. But what's that's what fascinated me, because everybody wanted the pixie dream girl like Katie Holmes that had a vocabulary like that. You know, because that's exactly what we were going for. Yes, of course. But yeah, I remember going to see this, and I think I had heard the, you know, there's this girl with this whipped cream bikini. I'd heard all this stuff, right? So I've seen this movie. I own it on three different, you know, platforms. I have a VHS of it somewhere in a box. I have a DVD that I didn't bother to dig out for this. And then I bought it on a Vudu Digital. It was like a $3.99. You know, the Walmart bin used to be the way to go. Now you just wait for the Vudu deal to come up. And so I bought it to have. And I'll never forget the one time watching this with my wife, who did not see it when it came out initially, but had, you know, seen the memes and heard about it. We watched it together, and I just remember at the scene where Ali Larter walks out, my wife infamously turned to me and said, "That's a walk-in UTI if I've ever seen one." And, so I mean, I was like, "Well, that was not the image I had going year, but thanks a lot." So yeah, but
more
no,
the thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, but no, I've seen this movie and you know, countless times, and I think one of the things about it is it was at a pivotal point in my life when I was in college still, but I was still doing a lot of music and all that kind of stuff. And this era of rock music, like late 90s, early aughts, is a very special, you know, place for me. So I feel, you know, a real kinship to this one. But Ron, you're a teensy bit younger than us. So what's your background with Varsity Blues?
Yes, I am a delightful 42-year-old baby.
glorious beard, though, Ron, for those that can't see it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Two-time Ratty Award winner for best beard, by the way. But I did not see this movie when it came out because I was not old enough to see an R-rated movie without parents. I was 17 years old. I didn't turn 18 until I was already in college. But I did see it when it hit HBO in the 2000s. And like most people, I was familiar with the whipped cream bikini scene. Not for the reason you might expect, but because of the spoof of it in Not Another Teen Movie.
Yep.
Which was the most lasting, like, pop cultural impact thing I thought that we were ever going to get out of that guy. But then he turned out to be, you know, Captain America or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I ended up seeing this movie in the probably 2001, 2000, whenever it hit, like, HBO. But I don't think I've revisited it in 20 years. So it was really an interesting time capsule into that time period and how many slurs they were able to use.
I was blown away by it. I'd forgotten we used to make R-rated movies for teenagers in this country. And I really had forgotten. I was like, man, there were a lot of F-bombs in this movie. I kind of forgot. Okay. Like, we're just dropping that like it's no problem. And then, you know, you kick in all the other stuff. It's definitely something that's of not now and not today. You know, they talk all the time about movies that couldn't be remade or whatever. I'm like, oh, they'd make this movie today. It just would have none of the humor or any of the kind of edge to it. But the funny thing is, people act like that's so like out there. All of my friends talked like that. I heard that every other day. So I never even blinked at it back then. And now it's, you know, it just sort of hits me in the face a little bit. But Casey, you mentioned you're a big fan of like sports movies and that kind of thing too. And just off the top of your head, like what are some of your go-to like sports movies? They don't have to necessarily be football either. Just one that you always like.
Yeah, I think, well, I was going to get into it a little later, but I was an extra in Remember the Titans. And that's absolutely one of my number one movies of all time. I love the spoofy ones. I love the unnecessary roughnesses, the Water Boys. Probably my favorite. And this is going to basically be a tell on me thing that I don't have the greatest taste in movies, is probably one of my favorite movies ever is The Program.
Oh, I love that movie.
It's another football movie. Yeah. I'd like to say it's the only time I enjoy watching football at Williams-Brice Stadium in Columbia, South Carolina. Was watching that movie. But
it's probably the best football that's ever been played at that stadium either. Let's be real.
Those are off the top of my head. Of course, I love the Jackie Moon, you know, that dumb comedy. I like to turn my brain off with movies. That's why I think Varsity Blues hit home so well for me, is that it was brainless and wonderful all at the same time. And it had Allie Larder in a...
it's very MTV. Like, MTV was getting into producing movies at this point and things, and you can't downplay the MTV-ness of this. And I don't mean what MTV is now, which is 24 hours of ridiculousness and, you know, all the other stuff that they do, the reality quote unquote stuff. But back when they were still partial music, partial shows and all of that, and how it just, those things sort of were infused with each other. This movie has a sheen on it that just exists in that particular time. And I think about movies like The Program and stuff too. We covered that one like a year ago too, and Necessary Roughness, all those, they kind of fall into sort of the same line. They're part comedies, they're part dramas, they're part, you know, this, but they're all built around this real simple story. Like, there's not a whole lot of, you know, stuff here, and it's not anything necessarily new, but it's just done when you catch people at the right moment, the right time, and they're a thing, you know, and they all take off. And it's always fun to go back to these kind of movies, particularly in the 90s. Like, I think about like Scream, you know, is a great example of this. A movie that, like, you catch people that are already sort of known, they're kind of stars, but it mints them and it puts them in a different place. And so I think this is the first thing I ever saw Allie Larder in, and she's still working today. Amy Smart, the same. I didn't know her from anything. And, you know, it's wild for me to, years later, I'm watching, you know, the remake of Hawaii 5-0, which I thought would be awful, and ended up loving every season of it. And Scott Kahn is awesome on it. I'm going, Tweeter like grew his hair out and turned into a normal person.
I had no idea that he was James Kahn's son until literally today.
That's really?
Separated I am from like the movie world, but
it, you can't watch those Oceans movies and you see it, it's like right there. So
it made so much sense once I heard, because I was going to talk about the James Caan famous line in The Program about it's famous to me, the why don't you shove that bow tie up your ass.
Yes.
In the Jersey accent, it was so poorly edited and everything, but it was just like, when's the last time 60,000 people showed up for a science experiment? And then they cut and it's like sliced with a butcher knife, and then they say, why don't you shove that bow tie up? It's wonderful. So I was doing a little research on that, and then I was looking to see who played Tweeter. Scott Kahn, hold on a second, Wikipedia. James Kahn is his dad, literally today. Telling on myself here.
That's wild though. No, but you know what, again, when I saw this, I was like, James Caan's got kids old enough to be in movies, okay, sure. Because I mean, my points of reference for him were the same things as you, like, you know, Brian Song, The Program, getting shot the hell up in The Godfather, you know, I mean, that's and a bunch of other stuff like that. So Ron, what about you with sports movies, man? Where do you go with this? I mean, you live in a pretty famous sports town, or infamous, depending on the time of year when the NCAA is around.
I'm not a huge sports movie guy, but one time many years ago, I had an idea to do an all sports movie podcast, and I never got around to doing it because then I had a child and a wife and a family. So it was like, well, I can't do this anymore. But I do love a good sports movie. I mean, and you'll hear more about that when I get to the plot summary, or at least it'll be alluded to when I get to the plot summary. So while you've already talked about a lot of other sports movies, I will say that I am a big fan. I like sports movies, I think, almost as much as I like actual sports. Maybe more so now, because all of the news about CTE and concussions and hell, those great hits I loved watching people get laid out in the 90s were like, oh, he can't remember his kids anymore.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of depressing.
But man, those hits were good.
Yeah. I mean, I will always remember fondly Ronnie Lott just going to get his pinky cut off so he could play.
Yeah.
And not have to have a, I don't know what you do for a broken pinky, cast it, tape it to the other one.
Yeah, about all you can do is tape it. Well, I mean, I still remember Anthony Munoz's like completely deformed hands. Like, now, just like, that doesn't look like you could even work with that, but you know, he still does. So
Yeah, they are very strange.
Yeah, it's very, very stuff. Well, I think we've done enough preamble here. Ron, it is your turn to give us the plot summary for Varsity Blues. So tell us what it's all about.
Okay, before I get started on the plot summary, I'm a little confused. Which football movie is this again? Is this the one where Kathy Ireland crushes someone with testicles and a famous "this better not awaken something in me" moment?
Yes.
No, but it should be.
Oh, okay, okay. I know. No. This is the one where Cameron Diaz sexually harasses Jamie Foxx, right?
No.
No.
Oh, where there are a bunch of idiots laying down in the middle of the road and they had to pull the movie and recut it?
We did that one last year, no.
Oh.
Keanu Reeves, was he there?
No, he was not.
Did Adam Sandler play a guy with special needs?
He did not.
No, not
did
this
Cuba
one.
Gooding play a guy with special needs?
No, he didn't. That one hits home. No. Yeah.
Did Tony Danza play a guy with special needs?
Also no.
Oh, man. All right. I got to be way more specific. Let's see. Was it Vontae Mack no matter what?
No, but that is a great philosophy of life.
In honor of our guest, are we remembering Titans at all?
No.
Is there something in the rules that says a dog can't play, or can dogs play?
I can't believe you dropped Air Bud here.
These are great.
Okay. Is this the one where the Marx Brothers showed up and they jumped in a chariot and rode across the field?
No, but that would have been even more awesome. You introduced that to me.
Is this the one where Matt Damon hates the Jews and Brendan Fraser is the only Jew he knows? Okay.
Nope.
Does it make everyone ugly cry at the end of it because James Caan dies?
No.
Oh, that's the program.
I know which one we're talking about. Whipped Cream Bikini. That's right, kids. Gather around and witness the birth of one of my favorite memes.
I don't want your life.
Jonathan Mox Moxon is the best clipboard holder in West Canyon, Texas. Apologies in advance for the 100 times during this podcast I'll accidentally call him John Moxley because AEW wrestler John Moxley stole that name. Mox is smart, unlike the wrestler, popular at school, unlike the wrestler, well liked by the teammates, unlike the wrestler, and he's dating Amy Smart. Although I will say the wrestler has a pretty attractive wife in Renee Paquette.
Yeah.
Nobody ever talks about his horrible case of male pattern giant fucking forehead that would go on to inspire the movie Megamind. And you think that would come up when they have to custom order football helmets for him from the town water tower factory. Mox loves football, but he kind of hates football too. All he wants to do is get out of Texas, understandable, and attend Brown University. More confusing. Which means he's always butting giant heads with his football-obsessed father, played by the bad guy from Death Wish 2. Worships the ground coach Bud Kilmer stomps on like he stomps on the hopes and dreams of West Canaan's players. Kilmer's a real abusive, domineering type, which works great for some kids, not Angelina Jolie, but you know, other kids. and definitely not the kind of kid that would choose one of the lesser Ivy League schools as his option. Thankfully, all Mox has to do is clap and get water for star QB Lance Harbor, his best friend. However, when Lance hurts his knee, Coach Kilmer tells him to man up and get a pain-killing shot. Then Billy Bob goes out and gets a concussion. Coach tells him to rub some dirt on his brainstem and get back out there. However, drugs and toxic masculinity can only carry you so far. And when Lance goes down with a knee injury, the resulting repair surgery will keep him sidelined not just for the season, but for the next year and a half, costing Lance his scholarship at Florida State and upending Mox's peaceful life as the backup. Kilmer has no choice but to turn over the game ball and the team Gatorade bucket slash helmet to Mox, his new team captain and starting quarterback. As it turns out, Mox has a giant head and a laser rocket arm, and the team keeps winning, with Mox getting all the hero's adulation and all the hero's temptations. After a visit to the hospital, Mox gets his very first temptation, Darcy, the former quarterback's girl, in her famous whipped cream bikini. Side note. Does anyone else here remember when MTV Spring Break would always do like whipped cream bikini contests after this movie came out?
Yeah, there was a reason. Yeah.
That might have been the most censored thing I've ever seen on TV prior to the VH1 cut of Showgirls, which is the most censored thing that's ever existed.
I agree.
I don't know if you've ever seen it, Casey, but they
they
animate bikinis onto the girls in Showgirls.
I didn't see the VH1 one, but
the VH1 cut is somehow a much more entertaining movie because it's like MS Paint bikinis on everyone.
Yes, and the guys that did the work on After Last Season did the bikinis on the VH1 Showgirls.
Yeah, it's Industrial Light and Magic at 8. But as this plot summary spirals out of control, Mox's life is also spiraling out of control. He's got girl problems, and I feel bad for him, son, but he's also got 99 other problems. He's got to come around to what people expect of him, get his head right, win the district for West Canaan. But first, we got to have some titties. It's 1999. Specifically, let's get some health teacher titties. Also, a lot more drinking. Because they've been drunk all night and are still drunk, the team loses their first game of the season. Coach Bud is about to blow his top, and Mox is on the firing line. He gets punished by Coach, and he responds in kind. During the halftime break of the team's big climactic game, everything comes to a head. The team gets together and tells Coach John Voight to fuck right off, and to everyone's surprise, he does. Probably going down to the Amazon to hunt a giant anaconda.
You see this scar? You don't get this scar by coaching football in Texas, man.
Thank you, Jay Scarface. Lance takes over as coach, and the team converts from some kind of power eye or sweep-based offense to some Texas Tech Red Raiders air raid shit, and they drive down the field. Billy Bob gets the hook and ladder play. There's a fat guy touchdown, which everyone loves, especially fat guys like me. And Mox gets to be the big damn hero, lifting all of his friends up in the process. You get a nice little ending montage, too. Lance becomes a football coach. Mox goes to Brown. Amy Smart makes a sex tape with Breckenmeyer. Sweeter grows up to become Wooderson, but more rapey. Coach Kilmer gets shot by his own troops in Vietnam or just quits coaching. And Billy Bob becomes Senator William Robert Blutarski. Or, you know, something like that. As Foo Fighters play and the credits roll.
Oh, well done, sir. Well done.
That's great.
That's fantastic. So yeah, so many things to dig into here again. But you know, as we do here on Film Strip, we kind of break it down into what works best, what doesn't really work for us as we get into it. And so, Casey, you're the guest. What things just stand out? What works for you most about this movie? What do you love?
Everything. Everything, Jay. Yeah. Absolutely everything. And I mean this kind of tongue-in-cheek, but mostly true. This was such an Oscar snub, in my humble opinion. I think Roberto Benigni won in 99 for Life is Beautiful, and 2000 was Spacey in American Beauty.
Yeah.
I mean, Vanderbeek could slide right into that American Beauty piece. He had to have been right there for Best Actor for both of them, in my opinion. I did look on Oscars.com, but he was omitted for some reason. I don't want your life. Was there a more iconic phrase?
I mean, the MTV board, this thing swept up at him. So
yeah, that's I'll the one fight anyone that doesn't then. Think so. I just loved it from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. It was brilliant.
Only won one MTV Movie Award, Jay, and it was produced by MTV. That's very sad.
Yeah, well, I think they were trying to, you know, not be, you know,
you've got to cook the books in your own favor.
I agree.
Look. MTV, nobody cares. Give Ali Larder best whipped cream bikini scene. Give
makeup.
Give Amy Smart best.
Let's flash forward ahead to modern MTV. It could be best cultural appropriation because you called it air raid stuff, but John Moxon straight up tells you he's ripping that off from Mississippi Valley State. So HBCUs once again coming up with the good ideas, and you know the white people steal them. But no, I'm with you, Casey. Man, I've forgotten like how much fun this movie is. Without asking you to be heavily invested in really anything. You're just there to kind of be on the ride.
I think that was the beautiful thing for me personally. Again, I don't mean to go back to it, but brainless is my genre. And this movie had sports, which I love, which I'll gravitate to. And then you're going to throw a couple love stories in there. I'm soft with that stuff. So count me in on that. And then you throw the drunk teenagers. Hell yeah. I mean, let's go.
I mean, this movie,
I mean, it all came together beautifully.
I wrote in my notes that this movie, the thing I love most about it is the attitude era of it all, because it is very much that era of life. I mean, it is. And I was like,
it's right there in 99, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I was into that. I mean, it's still into that today, but I was into it then. And I think that's one of the reasons this thing hit with such an audience is it hit all those same marks, you know, that Stone Cold and Evolution and DX, all that stuff, and what was going on Nitro and all those things. I mean, it was all the same kind of stuff. And it was also like, it's a very late Gen X, early millennial, like fuck the man, you know, kind of movie. And there's no better the man than to basically get a guy and say, look, John, we want you to basically be Hitler as a football coach. And in his first scene, he does the salute to quiet the crowd before talking about beating Bingville. And I was like, damn, I mean, just leaned right into it.
He should have just, all he needed to do was like pound on the podium a few more times and it would have just been perfect.
I know. I
mean, especially if he could have gotten like one of his perfectly coiffed coifs to like fall down over his head so he could sweep it back. Yeah.
I mean, it's wild to me. My introduction to John Voight was Deliverance, you know, which is a powerful movie. And it's such a great, subtle performance in it. And then to see what, you know, through the years, all the things he's done. And then, you know, I love that first Mission Impossible movie. He's so good as the turncoat in that, spoiler alert for a 40-year-old movie. And I mean, and I love him and all this stuff. And even in Anaconda, which is a bad movie by all accounts, he is so deliciously great in just this chunk role. And I mean, he had to know people are going to absolutely hate me in this. And it's only later in life that you realize like, oh, John Voight doesn't care. Like that's how you're able to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He is one of the most immediately hateable faces. Like,
yeah,
you just see him, especially these days or even back then, it was like, seems like, oh, he's untrustworthy. He's up to something. I don't like him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the charm of like a Gene Hackman, even the charm of like a Nick Nolte in Blue Chips. Like you just see John Voight, it's like, oh, you're John Voight. You're up to some shit.
I see. One day we got to talk about Blue Chips because Nick Nolte is doing a Bob Knight impression that entire movie, and it's fucking amazing. So, I love everything about that, and Ed O'Neill exposing the NCAA rules. I'm like, oh, that dates itself incredibly now. But what's neat about this and the way it plays out is in the midst of all this high school drama and all this stuff, you do actually get characters that you can latch into really quick. And I got to give James Vanderbeek a lot of credit, not only for playing kind of the angry sort of put upon, I'm smarter than the rest of the world teenager, but he plays it in such a way that you don't immediately hate him, you know? And I got a question for you though, Casey, because you did what I know every Northerner to have done in my years of working in higher ed. You rarely go from the South to the North. John's talking about, dude, you usually do what you did and go North to South. So why Brown University for Moxon, you think?
From Texas? I think the way that they, and here's my opinion as why they wrote it that way. That is the yin and the yang of what you think, right? You think Texas uber conservative, then you think Brown, which is about as liberal as it comes, that just that university itself. So I think that was probably, I mean, I'm not sure the writers were digging real deep here. So I think maybe even that surface level, like we'll go yin and yang here. We'll go A to Z or whatever. I can't even talk right. But we'll go from conservative Texas to uber liberal and make that guy. So you got to figure out, do you really like this guy or not? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I loved him though.
Yeah, again. I mean, he does challenge, and I think that's what makes him fun.
All I needed was some Pacey Witter in there, and I would have been.
I feel like it's a thing where they were going to do like Harvard or Yale, then they took a look at James Vanderbeek, and they're like, oh, no one's going to buy that. and you're like, well, can we do Colgate or Dartmouth? And it's like, no one really cares about either one of those schools. Ah, got it. Brown. Nice. Right in the middle. People still know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't use Princeton, right? That's got a little lore to it.
If Lindsay was here, she would argue for Lehigh because she's married to a Lehigh grad. So, but that, no, again, only diehards would know what that is. So.
You've ever been there? It's on a hill. It's got more steps than you know what to do with. I think even when you go uphill both ways to go to your classes and then to go home, it's crazy there.
You're also talking about the University of Tennessee in Knoxville where everything is uphill from it.
Is that right?
So, yes. Yeah. Everyone that works on the campus has amazing calves. That's about all they've got. But they've got amazing calves from walking up and down the damn hills all the time. But I love the football stuff in this too, because shooting football in a movie is a really expensive, very hard thing to do. You got to get a lot of people involved and others. And one of the referees in one of the scenes is the technical football advisor for the movie. So he helped them get everybody lined up, and you can tell they're going at about 3/4 speed. But what's neat is they actually have a real college football player in the cast. Ilial Swinton, the running back, Wendell Brown, played for Stanford University. and played for like a half a minute for the Chiefs and stuff. So like you look at him and you're like, I can see it. He looks like a football player. And Paul Walker was like 6'2". So you're like, I can see it. Quarterback. Everybody else, I'm like, Tweeter was a man way before his time. We hadn't discovered white 5'5" slot receivers in the 1990s. That was a little bit before Wes Walker took over the world.
You know what?
Oh, no, because you had what's his name from Steve Largent. He was around.
Yeah, but he was a bigger guy. He was
he had been around.
Tasker played for the Bills, but he was a special teamer. So
That's fair.
And not nearly as debaucherous as Tweeter. We'll get into Tweeter in a little bit.
We don't know that for sure,
James. By all accounts. But I do love the way that they stage the football stuff in here. You know, because a lot of times football in a movie, it either looks really good or it looks really bad. And like, Casey, you said you were an extra in Remember the Titans. I always felt like the football scenes in that, if you know anything about the Veer offense, that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like chaos, and then it looks great.
They had real players playing, whether they were in low-level college like Mercer. It was filmed at Paulding County High School in Georgia outside of Atlanta. It was the same teams switching uniforms. But what I thought was really kind of sad, we were talking about hits before. When I was on set, they ran a play. It was a pitch play to the right side. Then they had a stunt double come around, and they two stunt doubles, and they really had them hitting. And this poor kid probably got hit from 37 different angles. Or they needed 37 different angles of film, and he got hit every single time. He got to land on a mat, but man, oh man. And then the worst part, it never made the movie. There was one big play that they had a fumble that caused a fumble. That wasn't this hit that they were filming. Holy moly. It could never be a stunt double, man, because I hurt every time this guy got crushed. And he really, I think he was padded up pretty well, but it was like football pads and maybe something underneath it. They were trying to make that. Boaz Yakin, who was the director, was really trying to make those football scenes, because there's a lot of some of these movies that we talk about that the football scenes are terrible. We look at these quarterbacks, they can't throw. Even Mox has a little quarterback purist would probably look at Mox and say, eek.
Yeah, I need PFF Brad to bring down his throwing motion a little bit for me.
But it still was all right. Like, it read okay, right, based on the movie. But
it more or less worked. I love the design of the offense, though, because it's all built around let's abuse the hell out of the running back. So it's Lane Kiffin watched this movie and decided that's what I'm going to do with Derrick Henry his last year at Alabama. Except he didn't let Coker just run it around. This was wild. As they get inside the 10, and they either throw a slant or they run the quarterback for reasons, because I guess the underlying, and maybe it's said enough now that I watch it with more modern lenses, is that John Ford is a huge racist, so he's just gonna ride this running back to the end, but screw him, I'm gonna let the quarterback score all the touchdowns, which is kind of wild. But I love how this movie though did foretell that, like, hey man, the running back position is about to be devalued seriously in the future, kids, so learn how to play defense.
It really did. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's wild. So
you're uncovering a lot of things for me, whereas I thought this thing was so surface and wonderful in its surfacity. That's probably not a word, but again, you're peeling back the onion a little bit. I like it.
I just feel like a lot of football coaches watch this and are like, oh, we don't need a running back. We can just work around that.
Well, at that point in Texas 707 spread offense had taken over. And I only know this because I have a dear friend from Midland, Texas, right across the road from Odessa, Friday Night Lights, all that stuff. Went out there to visit her in a couple years before this came out, got to see that, be a part of all that. And I had always heard high school football in Texas is a different game, that they're gods, all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, but I grew up in Alabama. Football's a big deal here, high school, whatever. And I went out there and I remember flying over Dallas, and I asked the flight attendant, I said, what college are we flying over? Because there's a lot of colleges in Dallas. And she said, that's a high school, and just walks down the aisle. And it was like Southlake, Carroll, one of those huge high schools. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then I drove out to Midland, Odessa, and in the middle of the friggin' desert, there's this Taj Mahal to football. And I'm talking about the late 90s. And, so I can see it. I mean, I get that. And to see that put on film and to the way it's done, it seems like such a camp thing, but it's so real, And what's wild is that these guys are like these stars, and they got all this stuff in the yard about them and all that stuff. And now, man, that's like every big recruit in the world. Every 4 and 5 stars got that.
Yeah, It's a completely different world, and those stadiums in Texas are, I mean, you look at probably where you work, Jay, North Alabama probably has smaller stadium than some of these high school fields in
oh yeah, in yeah. Brawley Municipal did. The D2 National Championship was held there for years, and they would roll in bleachers to fit more people in if UNA was in the game or Jack State or somebody like that. But usually the dual stands is all you needed, you know, to cover that one up. But no, I love that about this. And I love, too, that there's like this whole, I don't know, kind of George Orwell thing going on about the proles uprising against the man and prevailing, you know, which is every teenage boy's fantasy, right? Is that you can tell the man to fuck off and he actually does. And I'm like, that is one of the things that I needed you to explain to me, Ron, if you could, is why does John Voight take that? Like, he actually goes like, okay, and he just leaves.
I feel like at a certain point, you just kind of run out of energy. Mm. And I feel like maybe he had hit that point. He had just gotten to the point of, you know what? Dealing with these little assholes is just not worth it. I'm just done. I feel like Nick Saban hit that point this year too, where he's just like, you know what? Yeah. I'm going to take my bag full of trophies and I'm just going to go live in Florida for a while. And then Coach Kilmer is just like, you know what? I'm just going to take my bags of trophies and then just leave Texas, and I don't know, probably go coach at the Florida International or something.
Well, he never coached again. That's what they say, which is, it's kind of wild, but it's at the end of the movie. But I love that the thing that he is harping on is that he's won like two or three state titles, but he's won 20 something district
just
championships.
Just two.
Titles, okay.
Kind of sad.
I remember calling that friend from Texas going like, hold on a minute. What's the difference? And she said, do you know how big Texas is, how hard it is to win the state championship? Winning the district is like winning the state of Alabama, because that's how big the district is. And I was like, oh, I get it now. It's like 20, 30 teams in a district. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. So I get why that's like a banner moment for this guy.
You guys ever hear of Rush Probst?
Yes. I was about to ask you if you knew who that was.
Well, this movie, literally, that's who I feel like John Voight was. I feel like this was right around that time of that MTV show, Two-A-Days,
yes.
Where they had Rush Probst, and you either loved him or you hated him. His kids hated him, but some of them loved him, but he was hard on them. Like, this was, MTV just basically took Probst, asked John Voight to be like, hey, here's the guy you got to be, like, and thrust him into a movie.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Probst built his whole personality off of the John Voight character.
I know, it could have been a little bit of both, right?
Yeah, I mean, he really did. So I remember that vividly, though, because that's, again, Birmingham was about 2 hours south of where I grew up. So, you know, and now I'm an hour from it. So, yeah, I know Hoover quite well. The tales of Hoover are strong in this state. So, yeah, it's neat to watch the Coyotes here, and they lean into the fact that they call themselves that. I didn't realize there was such a thing, but
Hoover does.
No, the West Canyon Coyotes in this movie. I was like, I thought it was Coyotes, but maybe I just watched too much Looney Tunes when I was a kid.
I thought it was Coyotes too, but maybe it's just a Texas thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I was wondering. So
it's pretty much, I think, the Texas accent is what they're going for.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The kind of yeehaw affectation.
Everybody here have been to Central Texas at one point in your life?
Just Dallas.
Have you ever met anyone that talked anywhere like this that wasn't from South Georgia? Because that's what they're doing. This is not how people in Texas sound.
So. Well, we're critiquing accents too. Vanderbeek's was terrible, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. It's.
But if you imagine that Mox has rampant CTE, maybe it makes his accent make a little more sense.
That's a great point, bro.
Yeah. I shouldn't joke about CTE. That's a very serious thing. And look at the size of his head. There's no way he's getting CTE because you can't harm his brain.
I'm convinced that the MTV cartoon show, what was there, Liquid Television?
Liquid Television, yeah.
I'm convinced that the show The Head was the based head, off of James Vanderbeek.
I was actually going to make a reference to The Head, but then I was like, no, no one's going to remember that.
I said, you should know I would remember that. This is how.
Yeah, but I mean normal people, not you. Not
well,
us,
not me and you. Yeah, well, obviously. I mean, but welcome to the podcast. So
that's what we've done. Well, in that case, I'm going to go back and say that Tweeter grows up to become Dog Boy from the television.
That's also apropos.
Research after the show.
Apropos, I'm going to tell you. No, I do love, though, that you're right, though, the accents. And that was in my, like, what doesn't work for you about this movie. We kind of glowed on it a little bit. So the accents for me are a problem. As somebody who grew up in the South and has friends all over the Southeast and Southwest, we have a dialect. We have an accent. Sure, no doubt. But they rarely get it right in a movie. And it drives me crazy. I mean, Casey, you've lived in the South long enough. You still have a little bit of your Northern accent. But am I wrong here? Or
no.
Movies never get this.
They never get it right. It's funny. My son, he's six. He was watching tonight that show Jessie that I guess used to be on Disney Channel back in the day. Mm-hmm. And they had a girl named Maybelle that was on it. And I had literally thought at that moment while I'm typing up some notes, that's the best Southern accent that I've ever heard on a show or a movie ever. And it was perfect. So if for the guys out there that have young kids, check out the show Jessie and the episode with Maybelle. It's really well done. She does a nice job. Maybe she's actually from, you know, Toccoa, Georgia or something.
Hmm. I'll have to check that out. I have a 4-year-old who's in all those Disney things.
Jessie's a little older. Like, he's six. He shouldn't be watching it quite yet, I don't think. They're talking about boyfriends and girlfriends and stuff, but
that's fair.
Yeah.
But we let them because we're terrible parents.
But speaking of terrible parents, there are no parents in this movie except the ones that drink beer and we throw footballs at 100 miles an hour.
What's the problem?
The only thing that changes about these people from their high school days to their parenting days is, do they drink beer on Friday night or do they drink beer on like Saturday morning?
Right.
And clearly they're all getting absolutely trashed on Saturday mornings for these barbecues.
Hey, can I tell you, though, I want these guys' jobs, though, because they're out there in the middle of the afternoon watching these boys have the time of their lives. I'm like, what are you guys doing, man? Does the plant go like 4 a.m. to 2 so you can get off? I mean, what do these guys all do for a living? They're all insurance salesmen. That was my writing line. So.
There's an insurance salesman. There's a car salesman. Cops generally make their own rules.
Yeah.
So we know that. So they can just do whatever.
Yeah.
And the other guy's unemployed.
There we go. Okay.
He got laid off when the town shut down the lead paint factory that led to Billy Bob.
Yeah. Boy, is anybody remotely bothered by the fact that Billy Bob doesn't have a last name? He's just, I mean, I know they call him William Robert at one point, but I just assumed that was his first and middle.
But even on the back of his jersey, right?
Yes, it's just Billy Bob on it. Yeah. On his truck.
He had a pig. He had a pig. Huh?
Yeah, I do remember, like, back in the 80s, Isaiah Thomas would have his full name on the back of his jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know anybody outside of the XFL original version who has their first name on there. Let's leave little Rod Smart out of this. He deserved all that fame.
Hey, Carolina Panther Rod Smart. I have nothing but love for him.
And I want to say he was a Western Kentucky Hilltopper.
I believe that is correct. Yeah, yeah, he's running back. Yeah. So, yeah. So, but no, I love the camaraderie between the dudes, though, because the dudes I went to high school with, I didn't play football, but I ran track. I was in sports. I had friends, and sometimes you just pile in a truck, because back in these days, kids, gas was so cheap, you could just do this. You just pile in somebody's car and you just go, and you didn't know where you were going or when you were coming back. But there was always like the one wild friend tweeter out there. There was the one kind of the old boy, he's just the good old boy, Billy Bob. And then you had the two, you know, stars that all the rest of us normal schlubs were hanging around with, because you figure, well, they're going to turn down a couple of these girls. Maybe I'll have a shot. But I love the camaraderie between all these guys. And this was my introduction to Paul Walker. And of course, I saw a lot of the stuff he did in his career. And you can knock the guy's acting chops if you want, but you can never say the guy didn't have charisma. I mean, he was just oozing it at all times. And when he gets up and does his little speech at the high school prep rally thing, and every girl is like oohing and on with everything he says, I'm like, y'all, that ain't fake. I've seen that happen in my high school. So
yeah, same here.
But no, he's, I don't know. They just had a thing about them that it was neat to watch the guys, but what's funny is to watch the women in their lives circle around them. And I have to start with Mox's mom, whose entire thing is to enable her younger son religious exploration, which I think is so sweet, don't y'all?
Yeah, it was, but it was so out of place, wasn't it? Like, what? Did the writer just say, you know what? We need 5 minutes off of football for a little bit. I loved it. It was sweet, but
the whole purpose of that bit, I think, was to get that kid dressed like Louis Farrakhan.
At some point, yeah.
That was the joke at the end.
Yeah, I think the joke was that. Well, that was the joke in the middle because he's buying the condoms.
Yeah.
and then you at the end, you get him dressed like, I don't know, Oshin Rikyo or one of those death cults.
Yeah.
So you get like two really good visual. Actually, that kid's whole purpose is a visual joke because I forgot he shows up like tied to a cross. Like,
that's right.
Yeah.
Like one of those Filipino reenactors of.
Yes.
The Stations of the Cross, where they get actually whipped and scourged.
Oh, I thought he was going to do the Road to Magdalena at some point too. I mean, he seemed to have all of the different things together, you know. So it's the same bit, but it is a bit, and I think the bit is like that. You have the older brother who's really smart and is into football or whatever, so the younger brother's got to be into some like different stuff. And I kind of went into my own head because my brother was the smart one and was the football player, and I was a lot younger than him. I was about 5-6 years younger than him, so I was always into like movies and comic books and, you know, music and stuff. I wasn't much of an athlete. I just ran, you know, so I didn't, you know, try on different religious paraphernalia, but I sort of felt a little bit for that guy. And sad story, that actor like disappeared like 15-20 years ago. They've never heard from him again. He is assumed to have gone on his own way, but he's there for that comic relief to take your mind off football for a minute, but also to show like how quote normal this is. But I think he's also there to show that like Mox can be a normal person, because it's in those moments that James Vanderbeek drops the bad accent and is just playing James Vanderbeek or just playing Dawson. And that's when he's at his best stuff, is when he's with Amy Smart and when he's doing that, when he's not trying to be a football guy.
100%. And that's why I think I loved it so much too, is because it was Dawson. And then he threw that, I don't want your life. And it was like, come on, bro.
Does anybody have a problem with the fact that the hook and ladder play involved an ineligible player multiple times in this movie?
What's up with you people from Tuscaloosa that are always complaining about the refs?
Was he the left tackle or was he the right tackle?
I think he was the left, because that's where but he lines up on the right a lot too. He's really more of a guard, honestly, the way he's built. So.
Well, yeah, he's built like a guard, but yeah. You know, that
you would think also, he would be on the left, but I think he is on the right. You're right, Ron.
He might be a little too slow to be on the left.
Maybe
he's
so.
He's not. Even at 3/4 speed, he looks visibly slow.
Yeah.
I say that like his 3/4 speed isn't like my 100%. but yeah, I don't know, because you get tackles are eligible on certain plays.
Except when it involves the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, that's the Detroit Lions. They were going to they could find a way to screw up winning the lottery. And they're active. Well, they already did that once with Barry Sanders. They'll right. find a way to keep doing it.
This is true, and that hurts me because I did like the run and shoot a little bit, but that's wild. I got a question for y'all though, real quick. Was it me or was Amy Smart's character Jules, like, did they just do bad editing or whatever? Because her attitude seems to turn on a dime at all times. Like at one point she's like sort of over it girl, and then she's super supportive girl, and then she's like pissed off at Mox, but then he gets into Brown and all of a sudden she likes him again, like within a scene. I mean, I couldn't figure out what her deal was.
I don't know if it was bad editing, but I wanted to like her so much, and you kind of throw her away as a character, right? She's kind of like, all right, oh, he did the right thing by making what's her name,
I forget Darcy.
Her name. Darcy, thank you.
Yeah,
by just call her Allie Larder. You know, it's fine. Saying,
that's what I should have done, by covering her up and going home. You know, so like, but you want to like her, but just I don't know. There's not enough there. There's no substance. Which again, so, I really like no substance, but she didn't have any.
So you mentioned the covering her up scene, and that just made me realize that she's got whipped cream all over that couch.
Yeah,
like she literally.
Who's just cleaning that up?
I mean, both of the parents belong to a gun club. I'm kind of feeling like there's a maid situation going on there. So
yeah, it's a gun club with half price drinks.
Yeah.
So it's more of a private social gathering than anything else.
Yeah.
I feel like that's safe.
Yeah.
It's very Texas. I knew a guy once who lived in a place that was a dry county, but they had a dispensation for private clubs. So every like Saturday morning, he would get up and go to the club to be the bartender and would make, you know, $300 in tips because he would be there all day selling beer, because that was the only way they could get around the Dry County laws.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's that kind of situation where, like, you know, it's the gun club, but you know,
yeah.
The only thing that we're shooting is like Jello shooters.
Oh no, man! This is Texas. There's probably some ammo involved. There were heads on the walls.
That's Billy Bob later.
That is Billy Bob. We talk about that scene for a minute though, because in the middle of this kind of raunchy teenage sex comedy thing, there's this really dark, sad scene where you know he gets concussed, Lance gets hurt, he gets yelled at by Hitler Voigt, and you know he's kind of losing his mind, and he brings his pig by for Mox to take care of, and he's out on the football field shooting his old trophies with his gun, and him and Mox have like this very like deep convo right in the middle of that, and I was like, man, I did not expect this movie to kind of pull at the old strings a little bit, but it does.
Yeah, it definitely does. I think again, who wrote this thing?
But W. Peter Iliff, and I don't know anything else he's ever written. He worked in TV for a long time, but
I think he was just trying to throw stuff together. Like, ooh, we could make this one. Because you like Billy Bob the best, right? I mean, there's not much to him. He's just the big fat guy. Everyone loves the big fat guy.
He's the funny one, yeah. So, I mean, he gets up with the strippers, you know? He gives Miss Davis a 10. I give it a 10. You know? Will you go to prom with me? So that is one of the funniest things. So
he's definitely the funniest character in the movie, I think, and the one with the most pathos at that scene. Because that's like, oh, that's a real surprise when it just makes that hard right turn. It's like, no, Billy Bob is super sad and kind of messed up and definitely has some brain issues.
I mean, you kind of get the sense they don't talk about it because he never talks about his dad. He says, Coach was like a father to me, treated me like a son, better, you know. And he talks about, you know, his mother's dead. Like, so you feel like he probably lives with like his grandparents who, you know, can't really do anything, you know, at this point he's a man. So you just let him go and do. And so he doesn't have anybody in his life. And the one person he did look up to turns on him because he's a huge asshole. And so I don't know. I think Billy Bob is the heart of the movie in a lot of ways because he is so funny and he is so likable that you just feel like he's so put upon.
Yeah, you don't hate him, like, right? Like he's just even if he does live with grandma or meemaw or whomever he's living with, like he doesn't do anything wrong. He's part of the crew, right? But he's not Tweeter.
Yeah,
he's not the smart one. He's the goofy one. He's the token fat kid, and he's so likable. Like you love him. You just want to give him a hug.
He's everybody's best friend. He's the big teddy bear, you know, in a lot of ways. And
he's not the guy who's whining about, you know, his hot girlfriend going to Brown. He's not the guy who's going to go to, who is 100% going to go to jail. Pick your collection of poisons.
Yeah.
He's just the good old boy. Who's good old boy in around town. And he's just going to be there till he's not.
Yeah. I mean,
he's going to work on the parks department at the town and mow grass and mow the fields. And that's it. That's what he's going to do and be happy and go to the gun club.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I love the Billy Bob character. And he has so much fun. I like Wendell, too, though. He doesn't get a lot in here, but the little bit we do get, I like the way that he plays it off where he's not just, you know, the quote, the angry black kid or whatever. Like, he's actually like, hey, look, man, I'm going to school. I'm going to get this right. But you need to realize what's going on, Mox. And to Mox's credit, he's like, you know what? You're right, man. Well, screw this. And so he just starts changing plays up, you know, because what's the coach going to do? There is no other quarterback, apparently, within the whole world. Because, you know, Voigt would be playing a ninth grader if he had one.
Yeah, because he's telling the one thing he does is when he threatens, when Mox threatens to quit, he's like, all right, Tweeter, you take the snaps. Like, is that really going to?
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea. So,
I mean, is he going to like hide behind the line and then just like follow Billy Bob like a shadow and hope nobody notices him? Is that how you're going to power rush with Tweeter?
Yeah, yeah. I don't
know
how
they usually work in movies, though. They usually do work.
I did see a school once, a 3A school. I was calling ball in Pike County, Alabama. And they only had maybe like 20 players on the whole team anyway, and their quarterback got hurt. So their little small running back, who was just a beast for a 3A school, they just direct snapped it to him for the whole second half, and they scored like four times doing that. But their offensive line was amazing, so James could just slip through. But like you knew what was coming; like there was no secret to it. It was just do something about it. You know?
Did they sub him? Hopefully, he didn't play every single play.
He played running back and he played free safety. He never came off the field, Casey. So that kid was an athlete. I mean, he never went anywhere beyond high school. But that high school mopped people for years. I once called a game of theirs that ended 97-0. They weren't trying to run it up. The other team's coach kept throwing it three times, would punt it, and they would return kicks. And at one point, the other coach said, "Man, I only have 4 8th graders in this team. What do you want me to put out there?" They were running like straight dives for 20 yards a pop. and he kept saying, "Hey, let's just run the clock." And the other coach was like, "No." And so Grant said, "All right, bet." And just ran it up on him. People gave him hell about it. He's like, "What am I supposed to do, man? I'm trying to coach a winning team here." So, this is one of those weird moments. But I just remember thinking that too. That just is, yeah, what's the plan here at all? I do have a question though. Like, do all the other coaches walk out in solidarity with Coach Kilmer once he is usurped? Because I mean, there's like at least two others. You see that one guy signaling plays in, but he's no longer around in the second half. It's just Wendell and Lance.
It seems like they all go away.
Yeah.
Literally, it's Wendell and Lance, and they changed their entire offense at halftime.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
I mean, that just goes to show you that Mike Leach was right. It doesn't have to be complicated. It can just, I mean, look, the air raid is just the veer with wide receivers. And, you know, what's the Denzel line? It's like, I got 8 plays, like Novocaine. Give it time. It'll work. Don't have swing screen passes. Tweeter. It'll work. I did get a kick out of Mox's, like, MO is to – I remember when clock plays, you couldn't kick it in the ground. You did have to throw it out of bounds or whatever. And his thing is to throw it at things and at people. Does it at a cowboy? Does it at a hornet? His dad's face, you know?
I mean, to be fair, all those people deserve to have the ball hooked at them.
They really did. 95
miles an hour.
Yeah.
Especially that hornet.
Yeah, that thing deserved it big time. So.
Who probably should have been tossed out of the game for, like, messing with the officials, because he was awfully close to the chain gang.
They threw that little sound bite in there too, like,
yep.
That was misplaced, but again, glorious.
I mean, yeah, Bingville had a lot of things going on. So we're at the part where it's time to rewrite or recast any segment of the movie. So we'll pass the horn around here. If there's anything you could change, any pivotal scene or any character that you would recast, Casey, what would you do with Varsity Blues?
I mean, really just Pacey Witter. I think Pacey Witter in there probably could have done, maybe throw him as the running back. I don't know. You get, I got nothing for this one. I thought, again, I keep saying it over and over again, and it's kind of boring at this point, but I love this movie. And I think it was so perfectly cast. I can't believe I thought Scott Conn was not related to James Conn, and learned that tonight. And I thoroughly thought it was well written, even though I questioned much of it. So I'm contradicting myself, just like I do on my show. And yeah, it was wonderful.
I wouldn't say you're contradicting yourself. I would say you're being in the spirit of the movie where people's motivations change randomly.
Yes.
Depending on the needs
Thanks,
of the
Ron.
Scene.
So, I'll keep you around.
Totally way to do it.
I feel like they should have leaned into the Dawson's Creek of it as well and gotten both Pacey and Joey. Like, I feel God, like.
Could you imagine?
I feel like if you're going to do the smart, kind of snarky girl, like that's what Katie Holmes was born for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might have had to put James Vanderbeek like on an apple box around her, but that's fine.
This is true.
And I say that as someone who's a big fan of Amy Smart. And I feel like also like one of the things that didn't work for the movie for me the most was like trying to planify Amy Smart. Mm-hmm. Like you were going to fail that task because look at her eyes.
Yeah.
They're incredible. That's like, you can't, I don't care what color you dye her hair. You're not going to mouse her up enough to do that, but get a Katie Holmes in there for me.
Look, I saw a movie once try to tell me Rachel Lee Cook wasn't cute by putting overalls on her. So, you know, come on, Hollywood. So we all knew.
I thought Christy Swanson was one of the hottest women on the planet in the program.
She still is. She's hottest. Yeah. Look, I love Sarah Michelle Gellar, but Christy Swanson's a super hot Buffy. So very hot. The real quick aside, hot Christy Swanson movie and pure cocaine Charlie Sheen movie, The Chase. Strong record.
Big fan of The Chase.
Great. Yeah.
Any movie where Henry Rollins plays someone is one I'm on board with.
And was Flea in that one too?
Oh, was Flea part of the tail group? He might have been. Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Tell me I got a movie thing right. Hold on.
Yeah, no, that might be perfect. So the only thing I would rewrite about this is they blow this play early when Mox is in, is they do the running back throwback to the quarterback play for like a 2-point or something like that so he can score. It's a little necessary roughness, but I'm like, that should have been the special play that they kept screwing up, and he let Billy Bob like block 4 people, you know, into the end zone so Mox can score. Like the hook and ladder is cool, and I've seen a hook and ladder run in a actual game in a high school game for a win, and it was awesome, but it did not involve the right guard or whatever. Like that's just ridiculous. So I know they needed him to be a part of it, but that'd be the one thing I would change, but otherwise no.
So you ran it in the national championship against Alabama in 2016 in Tampa.
Yep.
So it only went for 9 though.
So I feel like for the needs of that play, Billy Bob lines up as the fullback.
Yeah.
In the extremely jumbo package?
Yes, extremely jumbo. The more stuff package, they call that one. From the Oreo. No, I love that. So, we usually do the notable needle drops here. This whole friggin' movie's a needle drop, man. Well, you know, I talked about the soundtrack earlier, but you got Collective Soul, you got Live, you've got Foo Fighters, you even got a couple of 80s throwbacks too. I mean, we get Thunderstruck, which is, that's a great hangover. Yeah, when the whole team is hungover and getting the hell beat out of them, let's play Thunderstruck. So that, I love that.
So I've been rewatching a bunch of Woodstock 99 sets because of the Woodstock 99 documentary that Bill Simmons did. And it turns out every set is like on YouTube now. So we've been watching a different one. And like the other night we watched The Offspring, and there's an Offspring song, Nitro, on here. And I was like, oh yeah. So like I watched that Offspring set, and then I listened literally to Smash all morning today, the Offspring album. And I was like, yeah, that song rules. So that was probably my favorite needle drop, just because it's like, oh, hey, The Offspring. It's weird that it lines up to my what's going on in my brain right now.
That's what I was going to say too. After Mox gives his "Let's Be Heroes" speech in the locker room, gets his team all hyped up, and then they run out of the locker room for the second half while Nitro by The Offspring is playing to that montage. And not since Rocky IV's "No Easy Way Out" montage after Apollo dies and Rocky goes out for a little ride in the middle of the night have we seen such a montage paired with the perfect music. I'm not even a fan of The Offspring, but I was ready to run through a wall for Mox, and that pairing just seemed 100%. Perfect.
All right, Casey.
Yeah, I was so hyped, yeah.
Casey, we are now friends for life because I love No Easy Way Out so much that I made my bands in college cover the damn thing, even though we were a grunge band, because that song rules.
I have it on. I listened to it before I came on here with you guys tonight.
It was on my marathon playlist last December. I love that song. It's a killer song. Killer song. Great,
perfectly
stuff.
Placed.
Yes, it is. Well, it's time for our William Shatner line reading. So the reason for, if you're tuning in while we're doing these, we have another podcast episode going once a month. Our friend Nathan and me are reviewing all the Star Trek movies this year. So we thought it might be fun here on the main show to do our best William Shatner presentation for a line. So Casey, I'll throw it to you. What's your favorite line in the voice of the Shat?
This is going to be very poorly done. So we have the opportunity to play like gods for the next half of football, but we can't be afraid to lose. There's no room for fear in this game. Now we go out there and we half-ass it because we're scared. All we have left is an excuse. We're always going to be wonder, but if we go out there and we give it absolutely everything, that's heroic. Let's be heroes.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Ron, what about you?
You disobey me, and I will bury you. I know about your scholarship to Brown, and I've got your grades under review. Don't think for a minute that I can't fuck with your transcripts. Get this whole deal blown for you.
Well done.
In America, we have laws. Laws against killing. Laws against stealing. And it's just accepted that as a member of American society, you will live by those laws. In West Canaan, Texas, there is another society which has its own laws. Football is a way of life.
Brilliant.
Very well nice.
If Shaq could have been like the principal at the school, that would have been cool. So, or at least the bouncer at the strip club that Miss Davis works at. So
are you trying to get that old man killed, Jay?
What?
Are you trying to get that old man killed? The bouncer at the strip club is where you're chatting there? No. Lazy club DJ? 100%.
Okay. Club DJ, fair. I was waiting for it. Because it's every 5 years we just put this song in movies. I don't know how they didn't drop Young MC's Bust a Move in this movie, but it is spot somewhere.
There's plenty of room for it.
Well, they had to keep space for the completely so on the nose that broke the nose, like a like a Mox pass to his father. Hot for teacher.
Yeah.
Needle drop.
And David Lee Roth needs to eat too, I guess. So that's what that's all about. Well, guys, we're at the part of the podcast where it's time to give final thoughts and popcorn ratings. So, Casey, it's your first time on the show. Maybe somebody's first time listening. We rate everything here on the bigger the popcorn and the more additives to it, the more you like it. So what are your final thoughts and popcorn ratings for Varsity Blues?
So I'm the goof on Message Board Geniuses, and hopefully some or all of our audience will tune into this to listen to make a fool of myself and laugh with or at me. But I mean this when I say the Varsity Blues is one of my top 10 movies ever. I love it. I'll caveat it by saying again that I've never been confused as someone with good taste in movies. Reese Witherspoon is by far my favorite actress, if that tells you anything. But I love Varsity Blues. Ooh, I just thought of something, and I'm sorry for always being long-winded and not answering the exact question as asked, but it's kind of my shtick. But I was today years old again when I figured out that Tweeter was James Caan's kids. Anyway. So it was amazing. I give it the largest popcorn ever. I'm going to put cheese, Jimmy sprinkles on it, some chocolate sauce. I mean, it's going to be the best. Like, it's going to be like my 6-year-old's ice cream, man. It's just going to be everything that's good in the world on top of it. I love Varsity Blues again.
Awesome. Ron, what about you?
Oh, man. I came into this having not seen this movie in like 20 years. And I came out really impressed by like how very watchable it is, right? Like it's, and you don't have to pay attention to it 100% because if you kind of zone out during a scene, the next scene is going to be completely different and you're not, and it's not going to really hurt anything. So for that, I'm going to go with a large popcorn. I really had a good time with this. Like I have been guilty of using the turn your brain off and enjoy it statement on many different reviews that I've done over the years. And this is 100% one of those ones that were I writing about this in 1999, instead of writing about wrestling, I would be like, turn your brain off and enjoy it. Cause there's lots of big hints. There's a strip club scene. They steal a cop car. There's a pig. It's got everything you want in a movie. So large popcorn.
Have you guys ever been to the World of Coke in Atlanta, Georgia before?
Yes.
So you've done that. So you know how you can go that down that line and just get all the Coke from around the world, right? This movie is like that. Most of it's really good. It's a little different. It's a different change around every corner, but there's always that one Beverly and you're like, what is that? That's awful. Throw that out and you go into something else, you know? That's this movie. There's a couple of moments where you're just like, this is kind of nasty and awful. This was really what I wanted. But most of it goes down so easy and it's so light and so much fun. And it lasts. That's the thing. And I think that's why it lasts is because it doesn't ask a lot of you. It's kind of like a movie like Caddyshack. That's not asking you for a lot of deep intellectual moments. You just can go there and do it. And there's like a real kind of twisted love story at the central of that one, too. And this movie borrows from that. But the football part of it, all the culture part of it is it's makes it so much a part of my brain because it was when I was really coming out of teenage life, but I related so much to this and still to this day. So a lot of fun and infinitely quotable too, and has been spoofed to death. But if you haven't seen it, or if you're like Ron, you hadn't seen it in a long time, strong recommend go back and watch this. It's a good one, especially if you're like me and you like football, and now you're kind of in the zone where there's no real good football for, you know, a long time, or if you're for the teams I root for, there never is any. You want to get amped up for football, you watch a movie like Varsity Blues, because you won't make you want to lay in the highway like The Program, or, you know, go take journalism classes as a 40-year-old, like, you know, Unnecessary Roughness, you know, or anything. And it won't cure racism like, you know, Remember the Titans or anything like that. And, you know, you won't learn how to go to the Buick and turn left like Any Given Sunday. You just get certain things right in this movie, and it's the best of all of those things. So I'm giving Varsity Blues a large popcorn as well. Well, I have a little special thing just for you, Casey, because I decided, like, hey, you know what? I got to give a gift back to the message board geniuses, because they loaned you to us for this, and we really appreciate it. I decided, of the Varsity Blues characters, who grew up to be who on message board geniuses? So real quick, I think Lance is who. So I kind of feel like Lance together, he's a real talkative guy, got a good wit to him. He's you know, working real hard. I think Lance is who's. I kind of feel like Billy Bob is MBG. Like, he, you know, much like Ron Lester later in life, kind of got it together, you know, looking real good. And he's just sort of a smart guy, the smartest guy in the room that nobody really thought would be. But I think Billy Bob grew up to be MBG. You know, it'd be easy to say Darcy, or, you know, the Amy Smart character is Joy, but that's a little too on the nose. I think who Joy is, see, the only way a white guy like Tweeter was ever going to play college football was to go to a place like Valdosta State. So that's where he was going to meet Joy, at like whatever mega church that she goes to, and she was going to convert him. And now he like runs the at-home lawn business and takes care of the kids and tries to hide his very wicked past because she keeps him in line. So she's the off-screen girlfriend of Tweeter in this. And then, I mean, obviously, man, Casey, you're Mox grown up in life. I think, you know, you just did the reverse trip. You know, he went north and, you know, eventually made himself way back down south. So that's my gift back to you and the message board geniuses of
that's awesome.
Which characters y'all were. So
fantastic. So good. Well,
again, Casey, thanks for being a part of the show. Tell people again how they can follow you, follow the message board geniuses and the message board geniuses podcast.
Yeah. Thanks again for having me. Truly. I love it. I hope I didn't mess anything up too much here. So with my yammering, but yeah, you can find me at From Sluggo on Tweeter. You can find all the boys at the MBG podcast on Twitter as well. We come out with a show either Wednesday or Thursday mornings at 6 o'clock. We've been having some fantastic guests and talking all the craziness that is college football in this world that comes from message boards. So I appreciate you letting me do that. And I appreciate you again for having me and inviting me.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Ron, what do you got going on over at Den of Geek right now?
Oh, great. I will have been covering The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, the latest and ? Spinoff of The Walking Dead, as well as all the other spinoffs. I've talked about some of them at some point or another. But yeah, it's mostly going to be that, unless I find any cool feature ideas that I want to write about. And maybe if I'm lucky, at one point somebody will take me up on my idea to write about the great history's greatest question: does ACAB include RoboCop?
Ooh, that could be
no one has paid me for it yet. I would probably do it for free at this point just to get it written down somewhere, because I think it would be a lot of fun.
I think that could be a very fun discussion.
it is the question that's been bothering me for like 4 years now.
Very, very cool.
So stupid.
And as we talked about, our friend Lindsay is starring as Chloe Valentine in the Bridge Players Theater production of Be More Chill. So if you're in the Burlington, New Jersey area, you want to give that a look, we strongly recommend it. She'll be back on the show soon. Of course, you can follow this show on social media at Filmstrip Pod on all the places. And of course, find Filmstrip Podcast wherever podcasts are found: Apple, Spotify, Google. Please leave us a positive review. Share the show on your social media. We appreciate the support. So again, for Ron, for Casey from the Message Board Geniuses Podcast, I'm Jay. Thank you for listening to this episode of Filmstrip.
Thank you for listening to Filmstrip. You can find more episodes on our website, filmstrippodcast.com. The Filmstrip theme music is produced and performed by Frozen Lake 121. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504(c)(2), Title 17.